All right, the recorder is started, and I'm going into the Kindle. We are in NTI Romans chapter 7, which for me is at page 268. How about you guys?
269.
269 for you guys. Okay, so 269 in the book. NTI Romans chapter 7. With Jesus, you have been released. This is what we were just talking about, sort of. That's kind of funny. With Jesus, you have been released. Because with Jesus, a belief has been loosened in the mind. The mind. With Jesus, the thought that you are forever separate from God, forever within a spatial compartment of time, forever a slave to your own invention, with Jesus, this was all undone. In Jesus, you see the limitlessness that is your truth. In Jesus, you see your innocence and love. In Jesus, your perfection remains unmarred. My dear child, through the symbol of Jesus, you glimpse your own truth. Through Jesus, you have been released because a light now shines clearly within the mind. Focus on this light and realize you have found your truth and follow this light with me. Again, the reason this works is because as the scribe, you know, what he's really referring to is the way I saw and I thought of Jesus. If this had come through someone who had nothing but grievances against Jesus, and you know, it wouldn't have been written this way. Another symbol, you know, if another symbol would have been picked, whatever symbol would have worked for that scribe. So it's not Jesus as much as it's what Jesus represented to Regina, right? It's what Jesus represented to Regina. And what he's saying is, all of this that Jesus represents, when you look at Jesus, you know perfection. When you look at Jesus, you know eternity. When you look at Jesus, you know divinity. But that's all in you. Again, that's what's being emphasized. That's all in you. How can you know these things if they aren't in you? So again, that's just the emphasis. Jesus is the symbol. Verses 7-12. You are the mind that made the world. So all of the world is within you. This really fits with what we were talking about, so I may have to bring that up again because it fits so much with what we were talking about. I was mentioning how, you know, sometimes people seem to awaken, you know, without the years of study that some of us seem to be going through and the years of practice. And we mentioned the possibility, not a fact, not a known fact, but the possibility that these people are popping awake because of the work we're all doing. And the symbol I used was the symbol of, you know, all of the popcorn is being heated, but, you know, you get these different little pop, pop, pops kind of seeming to happen randomly. But we also use the example of how we have these people in the world who appear to be exceptionally evil compared to the rest of us. You know, like the type of people who take the guns and go in and kill children or kill people in a movie theater or throw, you know, have bombs, you know, at the Boston Marathon, all of these stories that we have. You know, you also have these. And what I was saying is that, you know, when I look at someone like that, someone who appears, compared to the average person, to be exceptionally evil, I don't see that person as that's a bad guy over there. I see that as that's the manifestation of all of our judgments showing up there in that body. So I take equal responsibility in my mind, and whenever these types of things happen, the way it influences me is that I want to get even better at watching my mind, making sure I'm not buying into any judgment thoughts. I mean, not in a way where I'm beating myself up about it. It's in a positive way that I want to get better, right? A positive way. So what this paragraph is saying is, you are the mind that made the world. So all of the world is within you. It just talked about the divinity ideas that are known, but the divinity ideas aren't the only ones. You know, these ideas of judgment and attack and hatred and fear, they're in here too, right? And so then it goes on. It says, you are the mind that made the world, so all of the world is within you. Is this a sin? That's the question it asks. Is this a sin? It says, you asked this question, and you decided it was. And then you went on to decide that you were sinful. And much of what you see within the world of your mind is a clear reflection of your belief. So, you know, he's referring back, of course, to the judgment we made in NTI Romans chapter 2. After we asked the question, what would it be like if everything was different than it is? And then there was this, it says that two options appeared when we asked the question. One option was, it can't be because everything is as it is. And the other option was, it's different. And it says we became engrossed by the it's different thought. Like we totally zoomed in on that thought. And we kind of tossed the other thought aside. And as we went deeper into that thought, we then had, kind of a metaphysical mental experience of different. And then there was kind of like this oh shit thought, right? Oh shit, what have I done? And then this decision, I've done something bad. We answer our own question. Oh shit, what have I done? I've done something bad, right? That's the birth of guilt, right? Also the birth of fear, right? And so it's saying that this manifestation is also in the world, and we can see it. We can see it in these stories. So when we see these stories of these guys, you know, going into the elementary schools and shooting kids, you know, bombs at the Boston Marathon, this is the manifestation of what's in our one mind. But also those people, you know, these young people who are waking up so incredibly easily, that's the manifestation too. And what's really interesting to me is what this really means as we move on in NTI, this will be emphasized more. What this really means is that we have a constant choice going on in our mind. You could almost say it's as if our mind is split right now. One thing that's going on in the mind is awakening. The other thing that's going on in the mind is judgment. And we get to pick which side we want to stand on, sort of. Like, where do I really, really want to be? And this is, again, it's a matter of heart. It's not a matter of if I'm good, I'll pick this side, but I'm bad, so I'm probably going to end up over here. This is a matter of heart, of what do I really want to do now? What do I want to do? And even after you make the decision that you want to be on the side of awakening, you know, you'll find that judgment's an old habit. But that's okay, it's just an old habit. The more you focus on wanting to be on the side of awakening in the split, right? And you want to focus more of your attention here so that you're kind of, the way Peace Pilgrim would have worded it is she said she decided she wanted to be a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem, right? That was her language, right? So as you decide you want to be a part of the solution, you want to focus on awakening, then all you do is whatever you can to get better and better at that. And you just kind of keep doing your best and you get better and better at that. And so it's almost as if, based on where we are right now metaphysically, we have a choice of which side we really want to be on. But that choice, you know, in order to be a truly helpful choice, it has to be what I call a heart choice. You know, there are definitely people who will say, oh, I want to be on the side of the awakening. And then, you know, it's next second, you asshole! Like it's not a heart choice. It's only a mental choice. When it's a heart choice, there's just something different that happens. Where even if your mind is still judging, you're starting to look at those judgments differently, right? Something in you begins to shift and change once you make this heart choice that you do want to be a part of the solution or a part of the awakening. I think A Course in Miracles in the original edition calls it a part of the Great Crusade, right?
I just wanted to interject. I think the heart is really important. And for me, to me, that's the power center. That's where the power comes from. You know, everything else is conceptual. But if you're looking, where's the motor, what's going to run it, it's going to be the heart, and it'll go in either direction.
I agree 100%. From what I observe, and again, this is more from observing, because I think my choice was a heart choice from the beginning. But what I observe is there appears to be a mental choice that some people make to be on the spiritual path. It's like there's nothing behind it.
Right.
There's nothing behind it. And, you know, they're on the spiritual path for 20 years and they're still, you know, cussing and screaming and judging and, you know, nothing, you know, because there's just nothing behind it. Mm-hmm. So it does have to be a heart choice, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, that's where the power comes from. And then something starts to happen once the decision is made with the heart. So we're the ones that we decided we were guilty, and it's that, and we do see that in the world, right? Much of what you see within the world of your mind is a clear reflection of your belief that you're a sinner, right? So we see, and of course, every time we judge, whether we judge us or whether we judge someone else, we are reinforcing the you're a sinner belief. There's no real difference between judging someone else and judging myself. And that may very well add to those pops of people who seem to be more evil than the rest of us. They're not really. They're just the manifestation of the judgment that we all engage in. It's kind of, you know, just showing up there. But then you look at Jesus, and in him you see the light, and something inside of you rests. It rests because it knows that it need not worry. The truth is still within you. And if Jesus is your truth, then everything else must not be. And so you must not be guilty. You just need to let go of that which isn't truth and follow your recognition of truth back to your awareness of true. Someone told me, I think it was about experiences people have where they die temporarily and they feel like they've gone out of body and then they come back. It seems like, what are those called? Near-death experiences? Somebody was telling me about a near-death experience, or I read about a near-death experience about a person who was, you know, dead for a little bit, and all the person had to do was think of someone, and zoom, they would go there. You know, they were there. So if I'm dead and I'm thinking, oh, I wonder how my mother's doing with this, zoom, I'm with my mother. And then, oh, I wonder how Jasmine's doing, zoom, I'd be with Jasmine. And this was this person's experience. For me, that's a symbol. Otherwise, I wouldn't be bringing it up. But it's a symbol of making this choice about which side do I want to be on, the side of the problem or the side of the solution. Where I turn my attention, that's the side I'm going to be on. So if I spend all of my time thinking about what's bad in the world, what's wrong in the world, you know, I'm somehow going to pull myself into that direction. I'm going to find myself judging all of that. If I spend my time, again, we're back into the path of devotion. We're still in the path of devotion. But if I spend my time thinking about what inspires me, right, what opens my heart, I'm going to naturally be pulled in that direction. And so it's just kind of like that person with the near-death experience. They thought of someone and shoo, they were there. So if I think of all of the judgment in the world, if I spend my time focusing on that, zoom, I'm going to be there. If I'm thinking about whatever I'm reading that's inspiring me, whatever symbol inspires me, zoom, I'm going to be there, right? So that's pretty simple. You know, just choosing where you want to put your attention, and then where you put your attention is where you will naturally follow.
I just, again, you know, when you mentioned the heart, and I'm just, I guess this is my own clarity, attention to me is heart-centered
attention.
Attention, right? Because a lot of times when I hear the word attention, it seems that this mental attention, and that just doesn't, to me, that's a delayed thing.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm working on this, but I'm not getting anywhere.
Right.
You know, so for me, it's definitely the heart-centered attention or consciousness.
Well, and one thing that's really interesting, which I think you guys know, but some scientists, I don't know if it's considered the quirky scientists or the middle-of-the-road scientists, but some scientists are now saying that what they're discovering is that the heart is also a thinking mechanism. You know, like people always thought the brain thought and the heart pumped blood. But now they're starting to see that the heart is also a thinking mechanism. And that's very much symbolic of, you know, the ego and the Holy Spirit. And if you make a decision with the head, you're making a decision with the ego. If you make a decision with the heart, you're making a decision with the Holy Spirit, right? And now they're even saying that there appears to be some physical evidence of that. And they even perceive the heart to be a better decision-making mechanism than the brain. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, really
cool. All right, so verse 13. The Holy Spirit is within you also, and the Holy Spirit is more than a symbol. Now, this is kind of interesting because actually if you read A Course in Miracles says the Holy Spirit is a symbol. So what is this talking about? Both are true. That's the bad thing about words is... words suck. When the Course says the Holy Spirit is a symbol, it's referring to the words Holy Spirit, the Christian idea of a Holy Spirit. That's a symbol, just like the idea of Jesus is a symbol. When this says that the Holy Spirit is not a symbol, it's referring to whatever that is within us that we happen to call Holy Spirit, that somebody else may call wisdom, somebody else may call intuition. So it's not talking about the words Holy Spirit. It's talking about that, whatever that is, right? And that is not a symbol. That's something real within us, okay? So the Holy Spirit is within you also, and the Holy Spirit is more than a symbol. The Holy Spirit is the pure reflection of truth within the memory of your mind. This memory is not past. Indeed, it is what is very real now, but it is outside of awareness, outside of what you believe, calling you back to what is true now. So really, Holy Spirit here is not the character. The character would be a symbol, okay? The Holy Spirit is something within us that is the awareness of what's true, even while our conscious awareness doesn't hold that awareness. Does that make sense? So there's something in us that is aware of truth, while even if we aren't consciously aware of it. And that is very real. And of course, since it is aware of what is true now, it can also provide us perfect guidance now, because it's not at all confused. It's 100% clear, even if consciously we aren't 100% clear. I'm just waiting because 2 out of 3 people are writing.
Surely she's not waiting on me.
Well, 2 of you are doing it, so I thought I should shut up for a second.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, everybody ready? Okay, verses 14 to 20. Your conscious awareness is based on what you believe, but it is not a reflection of truth. To call you back to truth through the forest of your conscious awareness, the Holy Spirit sends symbols of light. These symbols come in many forms and many manners, of which Jesus is one. But they are all symbols leading you back to your truth, which is beyond your belief and conscious awareness. So whatever this is in us that we're now calling Holy Spirit, but this intuition, this wisdom, this knowledge of truth within us that is also awakening us, right? It helps us find symbols that are out here in the world that will attract our attention, that we will again look at it, that we will focus on it with our heart, right? Whether that symbol is Jesus, whether that symbol is Ramana Maharshi, let's see, J. Krishnamurti, Muji, a book like the Bhagavad Gita, you know, it just doesn't matter. You know, even the Bible, I mean, look at people, so many people have actually woken up using the Bible, you know. So it's our intuition or our wisdom or our Holy Spirit that is interpreting for us when we are thinking of or being with or reading that symbol, right? And so these symbols, again, become very, very important because, you know, maybe, you know, one thing a couple people wrote this week was that they are with the divine 10% of the day and not the other 90%. Two different people said that. Well, that 10% of the day, when I, quote, am with the divine, chances are I'm with a book or I'm with a practice or I'm with something that's aiding me, right? Whatever it is that's aiding me is actually very, very important because when I'm tuned into that aid, whatever that aid is, I'm actually listening to my own intuition, my own right mind, my own Holy Spirit. When I put that aid down or walk away from that aid or quit thinking about that aid and I move back into my regular work day, school day, etc., and I forget about it, my ego kicks back in. Now that, of course, is temporary. There comes a point where, you know, you can go to work and you're fine, you know. But for most people, that's not true in the beginning. Which means these aids or whatever your aid is or whatever your symbol is very, very important. The more time you spend with it, the more energized you are by your right mind, the more guidance you receive from your right mind, the more help you get through your right mind. It's like you're with your right counselor when you're with your aid, right? So this is where the Muslims have a great idea. You know, the Muslims, you know, they pray 5 times a day, right? Well, what if you spent even 3 times a day with your aid? What if you said, every morning, I'll be with my aid. Every day at lunch, I'll be with my aid. Every night before I go to bed, I'll be with my aid. You know? It's going to be way better than just morning or going days without being with your aid. Whatever your aid is, whatever your symbol is. Because when you're in touch with it, you're in touch with your right mind, your guiding intuition, that which is awakening you. And, you know, you'll feel the experience of awakening faster the more time you're with your right mind. And if the aid helps you to be with your right mind, then why not spend more time with your aid?
I think also what's important there is to see, you know, it's talking about the unconsciousness and the conscious awareness. The choice to do it is conscious, though. It's like a link between the unconscious, because it really comes from deep within, that you're not totally conscious.
It like breaks through.
And it breaks through consciousness. And it's kind of like a integration.
Yes.
You know, it's a coming together.
Yeah, in fact, it's like sentence 2 here. It says, to call you back to your truth through the forest of your conscious awareness, the Holy Spirit sends symbols of light, right? Mm. That's the breakthrough.
Yeah.
Yeah, the breakthrough. And I love the stories where people tell things like the Course fell on their head in a bookstore. You know, boom, what's this? You know, you know, these kind of stories are great. We all have some way of some way through some aid, almost always an aid, right? Some aid, some way, something broke through the forest of our conscious awareness and caught our attention. You know? That's what's happening. It's almost like if you're in a thick, thick forest with a canopy almost, but somehow a bit of sunlight gets in. Okay, so let's look at verses 21 to 25. Your task is simple, as it is simply this. Remember that the universe is a reflection of the past. Because it is the reflection of a past wish or past belief in your mind. And again, that would be the wish or the belief that everything is different than it is. Right? That's what the world is a reflection of. Remember that your truth waits outside this wish, or we could call it before this wish. and your truth is calling you home. Remain alert to the symbols that are sent into your conscious awareness to follow. Lock on to them and be led home. Let everything else pass as you see it. See it only as a reflection of the past, a mere shadow, and let it pass by without attachment. Stay with the light, follow the light, and it will lead you safely and easily home. Now, this is really talking about a particular phase of awakening that everybody goes through. It's the phase of awakening almost when you need to just not give the world too much attention. You know, there's a phase of awakening where people turn off the news. You know, there's a phase of awakening where, you know, if I have spare time, and you may have to work, you know, you may work 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, right? But when you have time, when you have time, what you do with your time is focus on your aid or your symbol of devotion. Instead of coming home and turning on the TV, opening up the newspapers, reading the magazines. Because that's really, at a certain phase in awakening, that's like eating junk food. Does this mean you like to eat junk food? That's like eating junk food, right? And you know what happens if you keep eating junk food, you know? So you know, there comes a point, to be honest, where you could say the enlightenment has spread enough that then you can go back to some of those things and you're looking at them differently. All right, so this is not, and you know, like people say, well, Ramana Maharshi read the paper every day. Well, sure, but he was Ramana Maharshi. Let's not get screwed up here in our heads, you know? He wasn't reading the paper and getting angry and getting pissed and forming opinions and making judgments, right? And for most of us, that judgment is such a habit that you, in order to break the habit, you need to get away from that which triggers the habit. Just like when you're letting go of alcohol, when you're an alcoholic, do you sit around alcohol every night? You try to get away from alcohol. You try to get into a different atmosphere, right? If you're an addict to drugs, you don't hang out at the crack house every night. You try to go to a different atmosphere for a while, right? There may be a time when you can be around alcohol again. You may even be able to go into crack houses and help rescue other people someday without being tempted. But there's a period of time when you have to be in a different atmosphere because you're an addict and you need time in order to break that habit and to nurture some new habits, right? That's what this is referring to. This is saying where you need to be now is with your symbol of devotion or with your aid. You do not need to be focusing on the world. You do not need to be focusing on the junk mail because, again, or junk food or junk mail. Because again, what you focus on, you are going to be pulled in that direction. So if you're watching, you know, judgmental newscasts, you know, watching reality shows where everybody's hating each other and talking about each other, that's going to be nurtured in your mind. And so it's much better when you have free time, that you spend your free time with something that your heart loves, that is helpful to you, inspirational to you. And that's why it's important that it's something that you love. You have to want to be there. Because if you don't want to be there, you're not going to do it. You know? You're not going to do it. So you have to find what you really love. And you know, for me, I remember for years and years and years, in the morning time, I had what I called a heavy aid. Like first it was A Course in Miracles. Then it was like scribing NTI. Then it was writing the messages that came to Regina and Laurent, which were quite heavy. These things were very deep, is what I mean by heavy. I don't mean heavy in a negative way, but very deep. But I'm a morning person, so in the morning, I was alert enough to handle this really deep stuff. Night, I couldn't handle those same things. So at night, I would handle lighter spiritual books, you know, like... Oh, I can't even think now what I would have read. Well, like I probably would have read the Michael Singer book in the evening, Untethered Soul, because it was lighter. I might have read like an Eckhart Tolle book in the evening because it was lighter. So I had a light spiritual book always going for the evening time when I couldn't handle the deeper stuff, and the deeper stuff in the morning when I was more alert. But I had something both morning and evening every day for years. And, you know, Jasmine may have been watching TV, and I may have been in the room with her, but I had my nose in Eckhart Tolle, right? Underlining, contemplating. So that's what this is saying. This is saying find your symbols or find your aids and then lock on to them, right? Lock on to them. That's where you want to give your heart attention. It's time now to put the world aside, because the world, that's what you're addicted to, and if you stay with it, you're going to remain addicted. So, now we need an assignment, and I don't want to make any assumptions about what's in anyone's best interest here. I'm just talking about what was really taught to me at this point in time in my development. This was in my best interest the day this was written. I don't want to make an assumption that it's in your best interest. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to find within yourself what truly feels right for you this week. Is there something that you're giving attention to right now that is really kind of junk food for you that you can drop? Maybe your time is perfectly well spent all the time. If so, keep doing that, right? But just kind of pay attention within yourself, within your own intuition, to see if there's a change that you could make now in your daily living that would be helpful to making the choice to be on the side of the mind that's awakening instead of on the side of the mind that's judging, right? Are there any shifts that you need to make just in your daily life? And I'll let you check within yourself, and whatever you find is fine. So with that, I will stop the recorder.